What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox. This is Adam Frommel here with Dan Favale and Andy Bailey, and today we're going to be talking about the Los Angeles Lakers. It hasn't gone well for them recently, as you are probably aware of. They've actually submitted two of their worst three winning percentages ever in the last 2 years, and the third one was from 1958 when they were still in Minneapolis. So it's pretty safe to say that this is probably the worst period in Lakers history. There might be some reason for optimism. They have a lot of young pieces, including Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, and Jordan Clarkson. And that's really what we want to talk about first. Are those pieces enough to kind of trump all the things that have been going wrong with this organization lately?
I don't know. I don't know if it trumps it right away. I think I approach this team with sort of guarded optimism because I do. I can acknowledge that Russell and Clarkson, and to a lesser extent, Randle are pretty exciting young prospects. But I think they're just kind of stuck in a middle ground where they have an old guard type of coach in Byron Scott. They have an old school veteran in Kobe Bryant. They have other veterans in Brandon Bass, Roy Hibbert. So they haven't really committed to a rebuild, and it's kind of hard for them too with Kobe there. But yeah, I think I would just go back to it's just guarded optimism right now. I'm not really sold on what they're doing at the moment, but I think in a year or two it could be a pretty exciting team.
Yeah, I'm with Bailey, and guarded optimism might be something of an understatement if it's guarded by like alien robots or something, because this team is just in such an awkward position. I get that you have a legitimate top two, top three prospect in D'Angelo Russell, but when we look at these other guys who they do have who are younger, we don't know if Jordan Clarkson was the product of playing for a bad team or not last season. We don't know what Julius Randle is going to be because he really is a tweener. Is he a power forward? Is he a small forward? He's not good on defense. He's also working off a broken leg. And it's definitely been hard to rebuild with Kobe Bryant there. This is something I know people were talking about it yesterday, that they're not going to be able to move on until he's gone. And if he continues playing, you have to wonder, if you're the Lakers, do you want it to be in a Lakers uniform? Because you really do need to usher in that next era. And right now, you don't really have the tools to do that. You have cap space and a bunch of question marks. And you don't know if you're going to be able to land the stars. It's clear that Byron Scott is just this sort of wheels greaser to the future. I don't think he's going to be the guy that they really rebuild with. There are so many question marks. The only thing for me to really watch this season in terms of being optimistic, I want Kobe to stay healthy and have a good last year. I think it'll be fun, assuming it is his last year. And yeah, it'll be fun to watch D'Angelo Russell because he is pretty much their only legitimate star prospect right now. It's fun to see Clarkson and Randle, what they could become, but Russell is really the key to their future at the moment.
See, for me, it almost feels like the Lakers have become increasingly out of touch with what you need to do to win in the NBA. And I'm not really talking about the Kobe contract, because that was understandable. It's a massive overpay, but they're rewarding him for the loyalty he's shown to the organization and all that. But,
yeah, all those trade demands and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's look past that. You know, he did stay there. But, I mean, Byron Scott's there. He's not a forward, future-thinking coach. He's there because he played for the Lakers back in the day, and they want to reward that. They only recently got on board the analytics revolution. They don't play great defense. They're not promoting three-pointers. And it's hard for me to even have guarded optimism about this franchise when their rebuilding strategy is almost entirely reliant on making key free agent signings, and their pitch is based off the history that no one cares about. You know, maybe that worked once upon a time, but it's not now because they aren't competitive. And we've seen a bunch of stars turn them down when they have the cap space to offer them max contracts. I mean, even someone like Greg Monroe, you know, it's bizarre that he went to the Milwaukee Bucks over the Lakers, or to a lesser extent the Knicks. And because of that, it's hard for me to feel that good about the future.
You said something that, I don't know, this probably isn't even a point, but you said that they just got on board the analytics revolution. After that whole thing with LaMarcus Aldridge, and we'll never know the full story or whatever, just that they didn't talk enough about basketball, they like came out and like reintroduced their analytics guys and hired these ones. I'm not even sure if they're committed so much as they're like, no, hey, look, this department exists.
Yeah, it does seem. Go ahead.
They're still just so reliant on what Adam said, free agency, even when you look at D'Angelo Russell. Mitch Kupchak has already said, I think we're going to have the most money to spend next summer. Okay, that's great. You haven't been able to get anybody in the past 2 years. And not only that, but you weren't able to keep Dwight Howard when you had him. I don't think he would have been the right fit anyway, but that's sort of besides the point. So I just find that, are they even on board with the future and that forward way of thinking? Are they even at that point yet? It just seems like they're doing this to appease, you know, the public, when really everything behind the scenes is like, hey, we have money, let's just try and spend it and get stars like we used to.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, they're like the more glamorous version of the Dallas Mavericks. And we kind of laugh at the Mavericks a little bit because they strike out in free agency so often and have these big name targets. But, you know, they're not as big a market as Los Angeles is. They don't have as much historical appeal. And until the Lakers actually realize that, saying, hey, we're the Lakers, come play with us, we've won so many titles in the past, like, I have even more tempered optimism than you guys, even though I really like D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, I like Russell a lot too, and I think maybe the reason I'm a little bit less skeptical than you guys is I think great talent a lot of times just kind of figures stuff out on its own. It's tough if you have these things we're talking about, though, an organization that doesn't really embrace analytics despite saying publicly that they do, a coach like Byron Scott. There would still need to be some pretty drastic changes within the organization for this talent and this potential to come to fruition. But just the talent itself does still have me a little bit excited.
You know what's funny is that we're saying all these negative things about their free agency pitches, and like a couple years down the road, they're going to be rostering Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and like Kevin Love.
That's what I was going to say too. Like, yes, they've struck out a lot lately.
I'm totally kidding, by the way.
I don't think Russell Westbrook's out of the question.
Somewhere else. Sorry, go ahead, Bailey.
I was going to say, I don't think Westbrook's out of the question, and maybe I'm putting too much stock into the homecoming storyline that happens so often in the NBA. Everybody, whenever somebody's a free agent, they're saying, oh, he's going to go home. But there is
Curry to Charlotte, obviously.
Yeah, Curry, Charlotte, Durant to Washington. I think there may be some legs to that one with Russell Westbrook, though. He seems very Hollywood to me. I don't know if that's fair or not, but I think he's a target that could very well be in Los Angeles in a couple of years.
Here's the issue, though, with them rebuilding through free agency at all. I think we should note, because for the most part, especially me and Adam, we've been really down on them. They were able to land two meetings with LaMarcus Aldridge, and that was after they bombed the first meeting. So I think it does say something. They still do have that historical mystique. But you're looking at free agency now, and you're not going to get guys who are still in the middle of their prime. You know, if they go after Durant,
except for
he's
Westbrook,
be 8 summer. If they go after Westbrook, it's going to be the same case. These players have already been in the league 8, 9, 10 years by the time they hit free agency. So you're really shortening your championship window like crazy to maybe a 5-year span if you're lucky, maybe more likely a 3-year span. And the other thing here is, I agree, I do think that talent tends to figure things out, and I take this stance with Porzingis and the Knicks. I think that he is so talented he will succeed in spite of them. But let's look at the Lakers. When's the last time they've really groomed a good young talent? And what makes me really uneasy is you go draft a guy like D'Angelo Russell, who has modeled his game after Ginobili and Stephen Curry, which I think is great for him, but you're also going to go out and sign Lou Williams when you already have Kobe, Nick Young, Jordan Clarkson.
Stuff like that
just seems so bizarre. I don't know if Russell's in the right situations where they're even going to give him the exposure and the touches he needs. I think Kobe might be the least of their worries in terms of acquiescing to what these young players need, but just the talent on this roster and the train of thought that the Lakers have established and still seem to be championing really worries me.
Sorry, I need clarification here, because you guys are saying talent tends to figure it out, but what talent are we talking about exactly?
No, I'm
talking. I mean, they have Russell and they have Randall, but beyond that,
my point was.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was just saying, I used the Porzingis thing as an example. I think Kristaps Porzingis is so good, he will succeed in spite of the Knicks, and I think that can come into play with Russell. It's just that with the talent that the Lakers have around him and the mindset that they've assumed, I'm worried that he won't even get that shot to succeed in spite of them.
And I think the main talent I'm talking about is probably just Russell, and that's a lot to heap on one player, obviously. I'm actually not that high on Julius Randle, and I don't know if we want to spend time on this or not. But
let's do it.
To me, I've actually kind of thought this since his college days. He dominated in college, but I always noticed that he dominated by playing this bully ball, something that you can get away with when you're playing against other college kids. And I always thought he's not going to be able to do that to NBA players. We didn't really get a chance to see him last season, obviously, with the injury, but he was, that's all he tried to do in summer league this year, and it didn't really work, not even in summer league. So I have a hard time, unless he adds some kind of finesse or counter move or jump shot or something, he's not going to be able to run through people in the NBA. That's, I don't think it's impossible for him to develop those kind of skills, but I think there's a longer road for him than some people realize or are willing to admit.
And there's also a really long road on defense, because he hasn't shown that many tools on that end. And even at Kentucky, you know, he didn't record any blocks or steals, which are typically good measures of how you're going to make the transition from college to the NBA. You know, those stats don't matter that much in the NBA, but they are indicators of defensive ability. So that troubles me as well.
The other problem would be, on the Lakers' behalf, are they at a point where they're going to let him, or rather encourage him, to expand his game? We're talking about a team that, I don't want to say actively eschews three-pointers, but they haven't invested in three-point shooting. So are they really going to bring a guy deeper out on the perimeter that would really help him? Do they have the personnel in place to help him develop counter moves in the post and do something other than run people over, or at least try to? And the other thing was, there was a stark difference between the way he played in this year's summer league and last year's, because when you didn't have D'Angelo Russell or another ball dominant guy on the floor in 2014, he really tried to play point forward, and it looked like it would work for a while because that was his versatility. He's not the best ball handler, but he has that energy, and he was getting up and down the floor, and that's probably his biggest weapon, is he's a high energy guy. But now you're putting him alongside all these other ball dominant guards, not just Kobe, but Clarkson, Nick Young, Lou Williams, D'Angelo Russell. That's going to be an issue for him as well. Can he play off the ball?
So we've kind of, I think the answer to that question right now, I would lean towards no. That's something else that he's going to have to develop too. You guys have both kind of alluded to this. There's the old cliche, there's only one basketball. The Lakers have a lot of players. We've already mentioned some names, Lou Williams, Kobe Bryant, Nick Young, even D'Angelo Russell, guys that need the ball, guys that like to shoot, and I don't see any way Byron Scott sorts this out into anything resembling an efficient offense. What do you guys think?
Well, I do wonder if you guys are concerned about Roy Hibbert there at all, too, because we know that he wanted more touches in Indiana, and he didn't get them and was unhappy, and his offense regressed, and now he's in a situation where he might touch the ball even fewer times per game.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, go ahead, Dan.
Oh no, you go. I agree with Adam. I think if he actually wants more touches, if he's really going to accept being a defensive specialist, then maybe he'll be able to hunker down. I mean, in Indiana, you have to look, they didn't have a lot of offensive talent, so maybe he wanted to develop that post up game. The Lakers at least have guys who can score. Maybe that'll make things easier, but that's definitely a concern.
Yeah, I think that signing has chemistry problems written all over it, because he had a hard time in Indiana, and my brother, who's a diehard Lakers fan, don't ask me why. We kind of been playing this game this summer of which new Laker is going to have the hardest time with Kobe Bryant, which one will Kobe make cry, that kind of stuff. And I think Roy Hibbert and Kobe Bryant could really clash. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's going to be one of two extremes. I think what's going to happen is what you're saying, where he cries or they clash. Maybe Hibbert's going to be in for a rude awakening with the media in LA, because it's different than in Indiana, and he had problems with them there.
Yeah.
But I also think it could be like maybe the shell shock of training camp and finally understanding. Like maybe he'll just realize and he'll sort of just get back into his role, protect the rim, provide the occasional putback, even though he's not a good rebounder. And that'll be it. It'll be one of two extremes. I don't think there'll be a happy medium. It'll either work really well, or it's going to be an absolute crap show.
And let me just say before you go, Adam, I do hope it does work, because I like Roy Hibbert as a player. So I hope that this is like a shock to his system. He gets back to the way he was a couple of years ago. But, man, there are some big personalities there. Anyway, yeah, sorry, Adam.
No, it's all right. I agree. I mean, Hibbert's awesome if he is a defensive specialist. He's so good in that role. And it's not like he's too old to contribute in that way. It's just whether he's going to accept it. But I was going to ask, I don't remember if Nick Young and Kobe spent a minute on the court together. Because didn't their injuries lined up so that they never played together, right? Or am I misremembering part of the season?
If you give me like a minute, I'll find out.
Yeah, I was doing the same thing.
If he counts as a new player, then he's my choice because that pairing is hilarious. I was so excited about that last year, and it just nothing ever happened because they didn't get to play. But five games in, I mean, who's going to throw the first punch?
Practiced together last year, and like Nick Young was trash talking. I think Nick Young probably is in a good situation to get along with Kobe just because I don't think he takes anything seriously. Yeah,
I agree with you. There was actually, do you guys remember that story where he was going back at Bryant in practice, and I think that's what Dan was just alluding
to. But Bryant probably respects that.
Yeah, so. That's what I think too. I'm trying to find the lineup information. Are you doing that too, Dan?
Yeah, I'll have it in like 30 seconds. All right, they spent they spent 287 minutes together. Listen to this, though. Lakers' offensive rating, 98.5. Their defensive rating, 108.4. They were minus 9.9 with those two on the floor.
Ouch.
I mean, again, that's going to be the issue is who's really going to step up and play off the ball? I think if we're just talking ideally, who do you want to make the sacrifices and become more of these catch-and-shoot guys? I think you have to go to Kobe because he's never been a good three-point shooter, but I think he's talented enough to become – whenever he sets his mind to something, he seems to be able to do it for the most part, and maybe he can be that catch-and-shoot gunner. The other guy is going to have to be Clarkson, who was only okay as a spot-up shooter last year. He hit less than 35% of his standalone threes. And then D'Angelo Russell, I want to see him on the ball a bunch, but if you're going to be like Ginobili and Curry, you need to be able to stroke spot-up threes, make cuts to the basket, backdoor – everything like that. So those are the three players that if this thing is going to work, they're going to have to coexist by not even playing on the ball. And that'll be a big adjustment for all three of them. But if this offense is to be even average next year, that's what has to happen.
I think all those guys need to sacrifice. And you have to throw Lou Williams into that mix too. He's got to figure out both ends of that too. And then to kind of piggyback on what you were saying about Kobe, I like him off the ball too. I don't know if Byron Scott can convince him to do that, but I think one pathway back to efficiency for him this season could be fully embracing being an offensive post player. I think his footwork isn't going to betray him. His athleticism might, but he's smart. He's got great feet, and I think he can still be efficient down there.
He could be sort of I'm reluctant to say this, but I don't even want to say this. I'm going to say it, but be like Klay Thompson in terms of post up or hover behind the 3-point line and hit catch and shoot threes. Klay Thompson does more now.
How about Aaron Aflalo? Let's go with that.
Aaron Aflalo.
Yeah, I don't want. I honestly, I don't really want Kobe hovering behind the 3-point line.
If he's not going to have the ball in his hands, I honestly think that would be the way to go. Again, we're talking about all these ball handlers need to figure out how to play off it, but I do think that he's the type of guy who, if he buys into it, can really become a solid catch-and-shoot three-point marksman.
See, for me, the thing about Kobe is that I'm not as concerned about his offense. You know, he's, as Andy said, he's smart enough, he's talented enough in the post, that he's going to figure out how to make it work on that end. But defense, you know, he was atrocious last year. Yeah. He can still be okay in on-ball situations where he's motivated to shut a guy down. But, you know, so many possessions where he's just watching the ball and his man escapes from him or he doesn't provide the right type of help defense. And it's really problematic. I mean, last year, the Lakers' defensive rating when he was on the court was 115.5. And when he was off, it was 108.5. And part of that is having to spend a lot of time with young guys who aren't necessarily great on defense. But that's an issue.
I agree with you defensively, but I want to hammer my point on Kobe real quick before we move on. His catch and shoot 3-point percentage last year, he took 2.2 catch and shoot threes per game and shot 26%. His 3-point percentage, I'm just picking a, since 2009-10, his overall 3-point percentage is 31.6.
I know he's a bad 3-point shooter, and I know he's not an established catch and shoot guy. I'm saying if he buys into it, I think it's something that he can become good at. I'm not saying that he is good at it now. Okay. So I just want to make that clear. And then to Adam's point defensively, I agree. I am also wondering, though, Byron Scott talked about playing him at power forward a little bit. There's a chance that could actually help him, because even if you're guarding stretch fours, you don't have a lot of them who move very quickly off the dribble. You know, if he defends Kevin Love, you know what? That might actually help him in terms of it won't take as much of a physical toll. The Lakers are screwed defensively anyway. They have Roy Hibbert, who could protect the rim sometimes, but you brought in a guy like Meta World Peace, who's probably your second best defender right now, and he can't even guard small forwards or shooting guards anymore.
Can I just cut in and say how excited I am that Meta World Peace is back in the NBA?
How like, have we not mentioned
it's
him
such
yet.
A better place with him in it.
From a non-basketball standpoint, I'm stoked. I have no desire to see him play.
Oh, anymore. No. I hope he sits on the bench like all game and just has sideline history.
Byron Scott will play him.
Oh, of course.
Believe you me.
Dude, D'Angelo Russell's going to be on the bench by game five. He's not going to play again, probably. Yeah,
their starting lineup's probably going to be Lou Williams, Kobe, Meta, Bass, and Hibbert.
I mean, over under like 40 games before Meta World Peace just like loses it because he's so frustrated with losing and just decks someone on the court.
Well, that brings an interesting point.
Well, he's the panda's friend now. He's peaceful, Adam.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Sorry, Dan.
He needs to make that name change official. I want to see that on the back of the jersey.
I still think that when he gets competitive, he can still be pretty violent. but now that we're talking about world peace and what he will do, we are getting to the end, and we have some questions on Twitter about the Lakers. And this one is from Alec Niemand at LG Forkman, which is a great Twitter handle. If Meta makes the team, what is the weirdest thing he does all season?
Oh, man. I think he's going to untie some shoelaces.
Ooh, okay.
I think he's going to steal that one from JR because he hasn't been warned, so he can get away with it once.
I think what he's going to wind up doing is like jumping on top of Kobe when Kobe doesn't want it. I honestly think that's what will happen.
It's like, I don't know if you guys follow baseball much, but when Adrian Beltre does something great, his teammates like touching his head because it makes him so upset.
Yeah,
it's going to be like one of those situations.
I'm going to say he either wears the panda shoes or he wears a panda's friend jersey. Somehow figures out a way to get – they do the nickname nights with some of those teams.
Ooh,
maybe they'll get panda's friend jerseys selling in Lakers.
Well, they let them put like a – can they be sponsored by Panda Express on an advertisement on their jersey?
Oh, wow.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And then I know another question we had was from Dave Leonardis at Front Page Dave, and he asked over under 40 games played for the Black Mamba.
I'm going to take the over.
Good question.
I'm going to take the over. I think that they're already talking about limiting his minutes, which is something they have never done. Not even last year, not when D'Antoni was there. They talked about not playing him on the tail end of back-to-backs or maybe just picking which game he'll play. He's talked about doing that. I think the fact that it's out there, I think he'll get to over 40. That's my prediction.
I'm going to say over too, just because I want it to happen. It makes me sad that he has to sit out most of the last two seasons. I'd love to see him at least be on his feet as he these last either year or last few years in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm going to say over as well, just because, you know, this could be Kobe's last season, and there's no way I'm going to predict a big injury for him during that. Like, we don't want to see that.
No. There's
that
another
answer,
good.
Oh,
go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say that answer was a great segue into one of the other questions that we have.
I was just going to ask the same one. You can read it.
It's from someone who I believe wants the Ravens to go 0-16. Their handle is at RealTrueBaca. The question is, will the Lakers extend Kobe's contract if he decides to play another year? If so, $30 million a year? I think that second part's a troll job.
I don't think that there's any chance of that happening, because if he does stick around, it's going to be to chase a ring. I mean, we've already seen Phil Jackson talk about that in the last couple days, about how he could see Kobe going elsewhere. I don't think there's any chance that they're going to let him come back and interfere with Russell's development.
You can't buy into what Phil Jackson is saying. He's essentially pitching Kobe on the Knicks, I think is what's happening.
Fine. But I mean, I think it's a legitimate point.
I don't know. I agree. The thing is that I'm gonna pull a cop out. I know this is a cop out. I think if he wants to chase a ring, he'll leave unless the Lakers sign a guy like Kevin Durant or, you know, Al Horford. Just don't get mad at him. Sorry. If they sign a star or two, because they're gonna be, I think, the only team that can carve out space for two max contracts next year. So if they're able to do that and maybe add another quality guy and Kobe's actually willing to play at the minimum, I think he'll go back if he thinks he has a chance to win. But again, if they stand pat and they're full into this rebuild, yes, I think he'll leave if he plays.
If I had to say one or the other to mediate, I guess I'd probably say he'll leave if he plays another year.
And I believe we actually just had another question come in to Hardwood Knox, if someone wants to read it.
This one's from at some jerk off named Adam Frommel at FROML09. If Kobe chases a ring next season, where would be the weirdest situation for him to do so? We already have an answer. Someone said Grizzlies. I say Sixers because they're not going to be chasing a ring, so that'd be pretty weird.
I think it'd be really strange to see him with the Clippers.
Oh, wow. They know. There's no way. Him, Paul Pierce, Chris Paul.
Exactly. Can you imagine? That would be hilarious.
I think the Knicks are pretty weird, even though Phil Jackson started it, because they're not going to be chasing a ring next year either.
If we're talking like legitimate like contenders, here would be a funny one. KD signs in Washington. Kobe goes over there with him. There was talk from Stephen A. Smith, granted, about Kobe and KD joining forces with the Knicks. What if Kobe just follows KD somewhere? Like, you know, or I would love, like, maybe he'll go to New Orleans, too. He's going to
be his butler or what?
We also had another great answer come in on Twitter from Phil Watson at Further Review, who just says Greece.
Oh. That's pretty good.
Yeah, what's Stephen Marbury's team in China's name?
Is it the Southern Tigers?
I was just being facetious.
We do have
trying
to
give a legitimate answer. Oh, he's on the Beijing Ducks now.
Awesome.
You guys want to hit this last question?
Absolutely.
And this was actually the first person to respond, I think. Where do you see Russell and Clarkson by the end of the season, and how many points do you think Kobe will average? I will grant him two questions because I think those are fairly related.
With Kobe, I think he's going to be right around 20. It's not in his nature to take that much of a backseat role. So 20 in fairly inefficient fashion. As for Clarkson and Russell, I'm a little more concerned about Clarkson just because I think that he was not entirely the product of opportunity, but that was one of the reasons for his success. On the other hand, he outplayed Russell Westbrook down the stretch in a game, and that's a good sign. So I don't think we're looking at either of them as like all-star contributors for a long time. I think Russell can get there. I don't think Clarkson can. But it's just going to be a season filled with ups and downs for both of them.
I don't want to add much because everything Adam just said, I personally don't think Clarkson is even going to finish the season in a Lakers uniform. They have too many ball handlers. He's one of their few trade chips. I think you'll see him somewhere else, and I think somewhere else will probably be a better situation because if he can be the primary ball carrier, maybe he turns into that, you know, mid-level starting point guard or maybe just a really good backup.
I don't know why I hadn't thought of that because it makes a lot of sense. My initial thought was, I don't really have any reason to think this, but I'm going to put some faith in Byron Scott and just hope that he starts by the end of the season. The young backcourt is still the starting backcourt.
I don't think that should even be a question. Like, if you're benching either one of them, that someone's getting fired.
Well, I mean, Kobe's a three this year, right?
Yeah, he's a four.
I think with Scott, there is the question though. Like, that's why I had to provide that caveat first. But anyway.
Oh, definitely. You have to wonder what interest does he have at heart? Is part of him really trying to win now because he wants to stay a part of this as long as possible?
Definitely.
Again, I doubt they've tabbed him as the guy who's going to usher them into the post-Kobe era. So maybe he's like, I'm going to win with a cruddy team just to exceed expectations. And then
I just want to, we're getting short on time, but I just want to make one more point about Scott. It's a lot like Tyrone Corbin with the Jazz a few years ago. They had these young players and he kept playing the veterans because he wanted to win. He wanted to get another job after he was gone in Utah. And I can see a very similar thing happening with Scott.
So if anyone is still listening, since we've gone so long, it is time for our record projections here. So let's kick it off with Andy here.
Well, I was the one who was trying to be optimistic this whole time, which might seem kind of funny when I give my record projection. I don't think it would be that surprising if they finished dead last in the West this season. And I think they're going to finish around 25 wins, maybe less.
Yeah, I'm gonna go 25 or less as well. I think they, on paper, they're a little bit better than last season. And if Kobe stays healthy, if Russell and Clarkson play well, if Hibbert helps them become better than a bottom five defense, they could scrap together 25 wins. But I don't see them winning any more than that.
I guess I'm going to play contrarian here and say that they'll win around 28, just because I do like some of their veteran pieces.
Are you high?
No, I'm not. but I'm trying to be a little bit bold here. I mean, that's probably the ceiling here, and I don't think they will finish last in the West.
Can we just have a moment of silence for 28 wins being considered a bold prediction? but while we are short on time, we are not short on...
Bacon! Where's the bacon? I smell bacon! 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 Gotta be bacon! Only one thing smells like bacon! That's bacon!
That's right. It is time for What Burns My Bacon. And today's sizzling piece of pig fat is being handed to Mr. Andrew Bailey.
That's right, Dan. We are not short on bacon. I assume a great many NBA fans are not short on bacon right now because it's NBA rank season. Every summer, ESPN releases their list of, I think sometimes they do 500, sometimes they do 400, ranking from 1 through 400, all the players in the NBA, and it's so, some of the players are so wildly misranked every year, and I think it's, I mean, it's impossible to get it right. Rankings are almost always, you know, by definition, subjective, unless you're talking about Adam's NBA 200, which is all numbers-based. Nice plug there. But every day when they release a new batch of these players, there's three or four guys I'm like, what in the world? How did he end up ahead of him? How did he end up ahead of him? It just drives me crazy. I don't know why it does. But just so many of them are just flat out wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had some issues with the NBA rank stuff that they do. And for me, the biggest reasons are just the methodology. Because they ask a bunch of people, some of whom definitely don't follow every team in the league,
yep,
to rank everybody on a 1 to 10 scale. And that's not enough space to differentiate.
They actually switched it this year, though.
Did they? I mean, I haven't even clicked on a single one of them. So
now
I'm not
what they do, and I don't know if this makes more sense. Now what they do is they present them with a bunch of different one-on-one matchups. So they'll say, you have this guy and this guy. Who do you prefer? And somehow they formulate that into a score.
That's strange.
And they're I don't really get how they end up with the number score. But they give all these different writers just a ton of different matchups that they have to go through. So the problem with that is somebody is subjectively picking these matchups, I think. And then the other thing what Adam already said, there's clearly guys ranking players they don't watch.
Absolutely. And
go ahead.
I think Adam, the best way to do something like that, and Adam, you know, our own Mr. Frommel over here, he does the NBA 200 of Bleacher Report, and he does it on his own. And it's a little bit more objective, and I like it. I think the best way to do something like that, though, is you get a few of the national guys who are actually following every team as much as possible, and you get in a room or you get on video and you just hammer out rankings. You rate each part of their game like Adam does. He gives scores. You do that, but you do it as a group, because I don't think it should fall on one person. Again, Adam's version is great, but the way ESPN does it is just wholly subjective. Like, it's just... it's a mess. I don't click on it anymore because I don't think they have the right format to do it.
I think it's worth noting that, you know, we interact with a lot of the people that are part of these rankings, and they know their stuff.
Agreed.
And it's the entirety of the project that's the problem, not the individuals.
It's the process.
I just want to clarify that, because I don't want us to like come across as attacking anyone, because they don't deserve it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And there is some value that with all of those minds coming together and giving an aggregate, a lot of it does come out right. And so I think I should acknowledge that too. But every year, like I said, there's several guys that I just think, how did he end up there? And, you know, it's ESPN, so it generates a lot of conversation.
A lot of burnt bacon.
That's right. Well, on that note, we are out of time. This was
well past time.
We were out of time 10 minutes ago.
we should have expected this with the Lakers, of course. Even when they're bad, they're fun to talk about. If you want to continue to talk about the Lakers with us, you can follow Adam on Twitter at Frommal09, F-R-O-M-A-L-09. Dan is at Dan Favale, F-A-V-A-L-E. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey, and the three of us are all at Hardwood Knox. We're going to continue to ask you guys for questions when we do these season previews, so feel free to interact with us that way too. Subscribe to the podcast on Stitcher or iTunes and give us a rating there. And thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much to Bino Udry. Shout out to him once again.